be a memory.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today, Andrew Smith and Dorothy Gundy tell us how one American city is using science to reduce its gun violence. Later, Brian Lynn presents this week's science report. We close with the final part of our Route 66 special series. But first...
"That's where I got shot," said Rashad Woods, pointing toward a small store in the city of Knoxville in the state of Tennessee. "Nearby are a nightclub where some people were shot and killed, and a church with bullet holes in the walls. There was a point in time I wasn't comfortable standing here," said Cody Mills. "But that time is passing." The two men work for Turnup Knox, a community-based organization that began operating in July of 2022. It mentors children and teenagers on how to prevent conflicts from becoming violent. The project is a central part of city efforts to use research-based methods to reduce gun violence. Turnup Knox began operating after a sharp rise in shooting deaths in Knoxville. The larger city effort to reduce gun violence includes policy changes in policing and other action. However, it does not depend on restrictions to gun ownership. That was important since Tennessee has repeatedly moved to loosen gun restrictions. In 2021, Tennessee started letting people carry handguns in the open or hidden without a permit. This year, the minimum age for carrying handguns dropped to 18.
India Kincannon is the city's mayor. "I wanted to be able to fix it," she said of the rising gun violence. "As the gun violence goes up in the United States, so has research into how to stop it. Researchers estimate there were more than 48,000 gun deaths last year, with gun-related killings and suicide rates not seen since the early 1990s. Gun-related incidents are now the leading cause of death among American children and teenagers. Now, researchers say they know more about which public health strategies help reduce gun violence and which ones do not. A report from the nonprofit research group RAND Corporation points to policies that it found help reduce gun violence. These steps include laws that permit the charging of adults who let children have unsupervised access to guns. The researchers say strong background checks on gun purchasers also helps reduce gun violence. Another helpful measure involves banning guns from people with a legal record of family violence, RAND reported. The RAND report also noted policies that do not help reduce gun violence. For example, it said concealed carry laws increase gun killings, as do gun buyback programs.
About 16% of Knoxville's population is Black, and about 40% of that group is very poor. Many of them live in East Knoxville, where the firearm violence has greatly increased. Like other American cities, violence increased in Knoxville during the COVID-19 pandemic. Before the pandemic, there were around 20 shooting deaths per year. The number rose to 38 in 2020 and grew again to 41 in 2021. As shootings increased, Ken Cannon, the city's mayor, looked to ideas by Thomas Apt, a crime researcher at the University of Maryland. His plan includes having police and community organizations work closely together. Apt's Center for the Study and Practice of Violence Reduction at the University of Maryland worked with an outside researcher to study Knoxville's violent crime.
The study contained a few surprises, said Knoxville Deputy Police Chief Tony Willis. Just 12% of killings by gun were related to organized criminal groups alone. That suggests many of the shootings only involved personal disagreements. The city's plan centered first on areas in East Knoxville with high rates of gun violence. The effort involves church leaders and community organizations. It also included a new police chief, an investigative division centered on homicides and shootings, and officers who work mostly in areas with many shootings. A goal is to increase public trust in law enforcement, which had been low. We would have someone get killed in broad daylight with a lot of witnesses, but no one wanted to talk, Kincannon said. That means we need more partnership in the community to build trust. That is where Turn Up Knox is expected to help. It involves ex-offenders, victims, and other community members assisting. They help identify those most likely to be shot or to become shooters. They also mentor teenagers and operate a lawn service that gives jobs to kids. And they teach families how to settle conflicts and deal with shooting events. Sometimes when someone is in danger of becoming the victim of a revenge shooting, Turn Up Knox gives the person a bus ticket to leave town for a few days.
However, some experts say programs built around Thomas Apt's ideas do not deal with enough of the problem. They note that the programs do not deal with suicide by gun, nor the issue of poverty as a risk for gun violence. Charlene Roberts' 25-year-old daughter, Jessie, was shot and killed in 2019 while sitting in a car. Her son, Kevin, 33, was killed in 2021 in gunfire at a birthday party. She is now raising Jesse's son, Princeton. She says he is strong, but that he has also changed. He always had the biggest smile, just like his mother, she said. It breaks my heart. He fakes a smile now. He don't have that smile anymore. I'm Andrew Smith.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy.
Sky watchers around the world were treated this month to two full moons, a supermoon and a blue moon. The American Space Agency, NASA, explains a supermoon happens when the moon's orbit brings it closer than usual to Earth at the same time that the moon appears full from Earth. The first supermoon of 2023 was in July. The fourth and last one will be in September. The last time two supermoons appeared in the sky in the same month was in 2018, the Associated Press reports. The next time a blue supermoon is set to arrive is 2037. The first supermoon arrived on the first day of August, while the blue moon was seen beginning August 30th. NASA noted that when the blue moon arrived, the planet Saturn was just a few days from its closest and brightest appearance of the year from Earth. Saturn appeared as a bright star to the upper right of the blue moon. Italian astronomer Gianluca Massi, creator of the Virtual Telescope Project, held an online watch event as the blue supermoon was setting below the skyline of Rome. But he advised that as long as the weather was good, world observers looking to the sky would not need any special equipment to see the moons. Warm summer nights are the ideal time to watch the full moon rise in the eastern sky within minutes of sunset, said retired NASA astrophysicist and moon expert Fred Espenek. Full moons happen at the exact moment when the moon is opposite the sun, NASA says. Astronomers say a supermoon can appear about 14% larger and a bit brighter than other moons. The Old Farmer's Almanac notes that the August full moon is known as the Sturgeon Moon. This is because of a traditionally large increase in fish in the American Great Lakes area during the month of August. Although it is called a blue moon, it does not appear blue in color. Instead, the name means it is the second full moon to happen within 1 month or the fourth to take place in a season. NASA says the moon takes 27.3 days to orbit Earth, but it takes 29.5 days to complete a full moon cycle. This is what makes it possible to see one full moon at the start of the month and another one right at the end. Astronomers say, however, that the moon can look blue under the right conditions. For example, this can happen as a result of smoke or dust particles in the atmosphere. While the blue supermoon brings the possibility for watching and taking beautiful pictures, its stronger gravitational pull also can influence higher tides. Weather experts advise people living in areas near shorelines to be aware of this, especially during storm activity. There are other kinds of moons that appear at different times. NASA says a blood moon happens during a total lunar eclipse. This event is when Earth lines up between the moon and the sun, hiding the moon from sunlight. In addition, the term blood moon can also be used to describe a moon that appears reddish because of dust, smoke, or haze particles in the sky. A harvest moon is a full, bright moon that appears closest to the start of autumn. NASA explains, this name dates from the time before electricity, when farmers depended on the moon's light to harvest their crops late into the night. The moon's light was especially important during fall when harvests are the largest. I'm Brian Lynn.
Now, Brian Lynn joins me to talk more about his science report. Thanks for being here, Brian.
Sure, Ashley. Glad to be here.
In this week's report, you discussed some different kinds of full moons. And during August, two of these appeared, a supermoon and a blue moon. How unusual is this?
So, yes, astronomers from NASA and other organizations say this is quite unusual. The last time this happened was 5 years ago, and the next time it's expected to happen is 2037. And experts explain that it takes 29.5 days for the moon to complete a full moon cycle. And this is why it sometimes happens that two full moons can appear in the same month, one towards the beginning and the other towards the end.
The report also noted that full moons can bring higher tides, and this can cause flooding. Just last week, a hurricane made landfall in Florida, just as the second full moon, the blue moon, arrived. What kind of effect can this have?
Yes, many weather experts had predicted worse conditions in areas affected by Hurricane Idalia, and one official at the National Weather Service called the situation, the hurricane and the full moon hitting together, simply bad timing. A normal full moon can already cause higher tides because it affects the moon's gravitational pulls, but a supermoon, when the moon is even closer to Earth, brings even higher tides, and that was expected to make flooding even worse in some storm-hit areas.
Okay, thanks again for being here, Brian.
You're welcome. Thank you, Ashley.
In September of 2015, VOA Learning English traveled along the famous Route 66, the 3,900-kilometer-long highway stretches from Chicago, Illinois, to Los Angeles, California. For the next 2 weeks, you will hear our reports from the road. We tell you about the communities, the people, the food, and the special landmarks that make up the highway that's the best. These stories first aired in late 2015. When Route 66 travelers cross the Colorado River into the state of California, it is easy to begin to feel like the journey is almost over. After all, California is the eighth and final state you visit. But the end of the road in Los Angeles is still a 500-kilometer drive away, and much of that drive goes through the treacherous Mojave Desert. Eastern California's Route 66 is broken, hot, and deserted. The road passes crumbled buildings of bypassed towns.
Needles is the first city in California after crossing the Colorado River. It was once a major stop along Route 66 and the old National Trails Highway. That road was built before Route 66, in 1913. Today, Needles struggles economically, like many towns along the old Route 66. Travelers on the road used to pass resorts, gold mines, oil wells, railroad stops, and ranches. But economic opportunities dried up, just like the hot desert ground. Large interstates replaced the mother road. Traffic decreased. Bypassed towns are common here in the Mojave Desert.
Goffs, California, is one of those towns. The former mining and railroad town was the first bypassed city along Route 66. Federal planners rerouted the Mother Road from Goffs in 1931, and in the 1960s, the new Interstate 40 bypassed it too. The town is now nearly empty. Goff's population is just 23 people. It serves as an example of how a disconnection from major roads can hurt a community. Goff's sits at one of the highest points in the Mojave Desert. From there, Route 66 descends to Finner and then on to Essex.
After a brief meetup with Interstate 40, Route 66 travels south to the town of Amboy. The remote town is easy to spot. A colorful sign that reads Roy's Motel Cafe stands tall in the desert landscape. Amboy has fewer than 5 permanent residents. The area's rugged scenery attracts international marketers. The desert scenery has appeared in commercials for Cadillac cars, German beer, and Levi Strauss jeans. The histories of nearby desert cities Ludlow, Baghdad, and Newberry Springs are similar to Goffs and Amboy. Once major stops for travelers, they rely now on Route 66 tourists to keep their few businesses open.
The urban sprawl of Los Angeles becomes visible some 100 kilometers away from the city itself. The distant lights, haze, and increased traffic serve as reminders that the end of the Mother Road is near. The Cajon Pass connects Los Angeles' eastern suburbs with the Mojave Desert. The winding, mountainous road once served as a Native American trade route. It provides Route 66 travelers with a final sense of the open road before the LA traffic jams begin far outside the city. On its way into LA, Route 66 passes through the cities of San Bernardino, Rialto, and Pasadena. In San Bernardino, you find the site of the original McDonald's, which is now a museum. And Rialto is home to a classic roadside wigwam motel. And then, finally, the road enters Los Angeles.
Route 66 cuts right through the heart of Hollywood. There, you can go Hollywood by touring a movie studio or watching a television show filming. But one activity that should not be missed is a stroll down the Hollywood Walk of Fame. More than 2,500 squares made of terrazzo, a stone mix, line the sidewalk along Hollywood Boulevard. Each square has a pink star in the middle, with the name of a celebrity lettered in brass. The first star went into the sidewalk in 1960. About 30 entertainers earn a star along the Walk of Fame every year.
The Walk of Fame gets especially crowded outside the TCL Chinese Theater. The business opened in 1927 as Grauman's Chinese Theater. The unique building includes pagoda-like structures and temple bells. The Chinese Theater holds many movie premieres and other events. For many years, it was even home to the Academy Awards Ceremony, or Oscars. On the ground outside of the theater are hundreds of signatures, handprints, and footprints of celebrities. They have pressed their hands and feet into wet cement. Actors and dancers perform on the sidewalk outside the theater. They might be dressed up as characters from well-known movies, like Freddy Krueger of the horror film Nightmare on Elm Street. Eduardo Lezcano moved to Hollywood from Argentina. He was dressed like music star Michael Jackson. And he danced like him, too.
I come here for live and work and looking for my dreams, you know.
Just west of Hollywood on Route 66 is another very famous neighborhood, Beverly Hills. Many celebrities live there. The neighborhood is known for its beautiful mansions, hidden behind tall walls and gates. Vendors in Beverly Hills and Hollywood even sell maps to the stars' homes. The maps guide you through the residential part of Beverly Hills. But they are not always 100% correct.
A few more kilometers down the road, the historic Route 66 comes to its western end when the road reaches the sparkling blue Pacific Ocean. The Santa Monica Pier is the traditional end to Route 66. The pier opened in 1909. Today, the pier includes an official sign that marks the most western point of Route 66. The sign reads, Santa Monica, 66, end of the trail. The official sign was put up in 2009 with the help of the small business Route 66 to Cali. The little stand on the pier sells American-made Route 66 t-shirts and other road-related gifts. Brian Vasquez explains how the sign came to be.
So there was never a sense of, closure for people. You would just come to the end, that's it, let's go home. For 83 years, there was never an ending sign until we created that one. So now there's a sense of closure for people.
We celebrated the end of our two-week Route 66 journey under the sign on the pier. We were not alone. Nearby, a large group of Brazilian motorcycle riders held hands and said a prayer. Then they cheered and hugged and congratulated each other. Ednilson Gablak expressed the excitement of the group.
Well, it's a kind of a dream, you know. All these people love the motorcycle, and we saw movies, we saw on the television, magazines, so photos. Today we can see the internet, so many videos. So I think everybody knows about something about Route 66, right?
The VOA Route 66 team agrees. And for those still strangers to the Mother Road, now is a great time to motor west on the highway that's the best. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.
If you ever plan to motor west, travel my way, take the highway that's the best. I get your kicks on Route 66. It winds from Chicago to L.A. More than 2,000 miles.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.